Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The My Baby and Me podcast in association with Nook.
I'm Jane Garvey and welcome to the My Baby and Me podcast. We're focusing on a different area of pregnancy and parenthood in each episode of this series. And today it's all about the preparation and getting ready for the day itself, the big day when the baby finally decides they've had enough of being inside your stomach and would quite like to meet the rest of humanity. Well, not everybody, but as many as they can squeeze in. So here to do the talking are the writer and broadcaster Ian McIntosh and the Daily Telegraph's Wonder Woman columnist Beverly Turner, mum of three, and the founder of the Blooming Bunch antenatal course. What's the Blooming Bunch antenatal course?
It's, you know NCT?
Everyone
knows NCT. So it's similar sort of thing. We're a bit posher. We have better biscuits. We give the fathers booze.
Beverly, you've got three children. What are their ages?
11, 5 and 3.
And Ian, you've just got one. You've got no problems. You've only got one three-year-old.
Three-year-old daughter.
Okay, so you've been through it just the once, but
yes.
I bet everything, every detail is
seared to my mind.
Excellent. Well, we'll come to you in a second. Beverly, do you remember, after three children, I've had two, but three, which of the births do you remember most clearly, do you think?
I can remember them all very clearly, actually, and they were all great. I had great births, largely because I was really quite geeky about it and just did lots of research and wanted to put myself in the best position where I knew that I could have a baby as straightforwardly as possible.
And you had them all in hospital?
No, I haven't had any of them in hospital. I had the first one at a birth centre, which is no longer there, and it was one of the few standalone birth centres in London that was started by an amazing woman called Professor Caroline Flint, who was one of the kind of global sort of leaders in the idea of active birth, and so that it's something that women do rather than something that is done to them. And it gave me and all the women who were able to use her services continuity of care. So you knew who would be delivering your baby, which is a massively important aspect for women who are giving birth. And then I had the second two at home because first time was so straightforward. So second time round, I frankly couldn't be bothered to go anywhere. So I had them both at home.
In the
no,
I'm just I'm thinking,
you've done that icky face
well,
that people
I'm
do
sorry.
When you always
well,
say
I'm, a bit, I'm thinking spillages.
No, I had them both in the water. I had inflatable birth pools in the lounge, which please
big hang on big flat screen telly in the corner,
yeah,
cocktail bar or cabinet, whatever you've
yep.
got there, and then a great big inflatable birth thing.
Yes, which means you see, there's a big birthplace study last year which demonstrated that actually for second time mothers there is no increased risk whatsoever to have your second baby at home, neither increased risk to mother or baby. Second time mums, we should be routinely offering them a home birth as their first choice rather than suggesting they have the babies in hospital. So for me, knowing that, it was safest. I felt safer at home.
And you'd had no complications. There was absolutely nothing
no.
that marked you out as somebody that anybody ought to be concerned about.
Nothing. And no. I think that's really important. There are some women for whom, if they have medical conditions, that isn't an option for them.
So the births you had at home, were they, I know it's difficult, but were they nicer than the birth in the birth centre?
No doubt about it. They hurt less. Partly because it was number two, but also studies show that if you are relaxed and you feel safe and you feel calm, you don't feel pain in the same way that you will if you're in an environment. I think it's quite interesting that the science behind it basically is that obviously we are mammals. If we are going to labour, we have to produce the hormone oxytocin. Oxytocin is stopped by adrenaline. So if we were giving birth in a cave and we walked out of that cave and a woolly mammoth came along, our labour will stop. That is fact, because it is not in our interest to birth when the woolly mammoth might eat you or your baby. And what happens now is that women go into labour often at home. They feel safe, they feel warm, they feel comfortable. They go into a hospital setting, they walk out and they're in the car. Where are we going to park the car? Who am I going to meet? They walk in, they're screaming down the corridor, the lights are on. They don't have those mammalian conditions that we need of privacy and dark and safety. And so their labour stops in its tracks, which is a sensible thing for our bodies to do. And then the midwife nurse will say, oh, I'm sorry, love, you're not progressing, go home again. They go home again, they go into labour again, they start to contract again, they feel safe, they go back in. By this point, they stop again, their labour can often stop, they then feel demoralised, at which point the midwives will say, we'll just speed things up a little bit. And that's often when you then get into the
spiral. And then it really hurts.
And then it really hurts because an induction birth is the most painful thing you can imagine.
And Ian, this is where...
Yes, that's exactly where my wife had.
You were just there. So what happened to your wife? She was overdue.
She was overdue by a full 2 weeks, a period of time that spookily was ended when she looked down at her lump and shouted, get out, I've had enough. And a few hours later, I've cleaned up the conversation. The real version was...
Yeah, yes, okay.
I didn't even know she knew those words. And a few hours later, she went into labour, and as Beverly was saying, into the hospital, and everything had stopped, and then we were back home. And then, brilliantly, just as the Champions League final kicked off... I know, can you believe it? It's so inconsiderate. that's it, I'm dead now, aren't I?
Did you get verbally abused during the course of the birth?
No, not that I recall. I think I had opted for the strategy of not saying anything unless asked, and certainly not making any what I may have thought were sensible solutions but were stupid things. I stayed very quiet.
Yeah, it's quite difficult for you to know how this experience was for your wife as she went through this. But what do you think she would say if she were here? Did she feel supported? Did she feel that she was getting the help she needed?
I think there were moments where she certainly didn't. There were moments, I mean, the labour, we were in the hospital at 9 p.m. on the Saturday.
This is in London or somewhere else?
This was in South Shields, right, in the northeast.
So a bit quieter than a London hospital might
be. A lot quieter, save for the screams of the woman in the room next door who was having a very, very difficult birth, which probably did not help with the whole adrenaline thing. And then the induction, where they have a certain rub inside. A sweep, that's a word I was looking for. They have a sweep.
No woman forgets that word, sweep.
Yes, it's a most inglorious procedure. And then that was it. You're sort of left there to wait and wait and wait. And there was a period at about 4 a.m. where the pain was beginning to intensify, but, you know, the nurses there have heard it all before so many times. And I should say that the staff at South Shields were absolutely wonderful, but there's always going to be a period in the procedure where, you know, you're not very happy. It actually went on until about 4 p.m. The next day. It was a very, very long labour, and it was not a very comfortable one. There were suction machines and cutting and tearing and all sorts of horrendous things.
But when your daughter was born, that was at 4 o'clock that afternoon. So
yeah,
the whole process had been going on now for really a very, very
getting
long
on
time.
For 24 hours, yeah.
I mean, I would imagine that you'd probably had a fantasy about what that moment where you're lovely, if you're fortunate enough, if your lovely, happy, healthy child is born. We have all had those fantasies. Did it live up? Was it like that?
I've got to say, 20 minutes beforehand, with my wife, you have to imagine being in stirrups with her legs up above a tiled floor, where a doctor was sort of kneeled down like a wicketkeeper awaiting a fast ball. And then for some reason, the doctor left the room and it was just me and my wife. And I've very sensibly taken a top half option. I was just going to stay at the top half and be supportive. But with the doctor out of the room and the hard tiles and the legs in stirrups, I felt that I should go into wicketkeeper position.
What
just
happened?
In case.
Just cut to the chase. It was all right.
It was absolutely fine, but it meant that I was in wicketkeeper position looking up at what appeared to be my wife slowly turning herself inside out. or like the Sarlacc, if you've seen Return of the Jedi. It was... It's not something you can forget very, very easily. It was, I mean, even just for me, it was a traumatic event, and it wasn't even happening to me. I dread to think on what level it must have traumatised my wife. But to cut to the chase, when the baby came out, it was she was put onto my wife's chest, and it was like watching a butcher kind of drop a bag of meat down. It was just this pink, fleshy, blood-covered thing that just lay there very, very still for a moment, and then all of a sudden came to life like this animatronic doll with tiny, tiny dark eyes, at which point I did, I think, what any red-blooded man would do, and I burst into tears. Like a little girl lost in a supermarket.
Oh, that's sweet.
And it wasn't even, it was just, I have nothing. I just went into complete meltdown.
I should say at this point, I've had two children, but both were elective caesareans. Mm. Now, that was because actually they were both breech babies. Mm. And actually, I don't know how I feel. I don't know any other way of giving birth. My only experiences of being in an operating theatre, being, I have to say, brilliantly well supported on both occasions. The second time was easier because it happened at exactly the time it was supposed to be happening, 11 o'clock in the morning or whatever. But the first time, I'd gone in the day before, which was a Friday, and they ran out of theatre space for me. So I'd been prepared for theatre at 7 o'clock in the morning. And in the end was sent home at 7 o'clock that night, having only been allowed to suck on an ice cube for 20 seconds. And I was starving. I came home and ate, I remember this, the biggest, a mountain of pasta. And they were so, I think they genuinely felt a bit sorry for me. So they did deliver my, they actually, so the next morning, Saturday, they had me back in for an elective, which I think is quite unusual, but I think they just thought this poor soul.
At Nook, we believe our job is to make your life easier. For over 60 years, we've been listening to midwives, doctors, dentists, and most importantly, parents. Only by listening have we been able to deliver a range of products that is specifically designed to satisfy the needs of mother and baby in those precious early years. To find out more about the full range of Nook products, visit our website at www.nook.co.uk. Nook. Understanding life.
You run a particular sort of antenatal class, the Blooming Bunch. I went to the NCT. Did you do that, Ian?
We didn't, actually, no.
No classes at all?
No, no classes at all.
Do you think that's... I mean, what do you think? I mean, obviously, you believe some classes are a good idea, Beverly.
I think it's a really good idea. Because you have to consider... There's lots of things you can do. There's loads of things you can do practically. A, you can look into your options for having a birth attendant that you're going to know, be it an independent midwife. It might be a private obstetrician that you want. It might be that some units will have case loading, so you will know your midwife. Some hospitals, even in London, will do that. You need to do a course of either natal hypnotherapy, hypnobirthing, very deep relaxation techniques, which will keep you calm and keep your adrenaline down, keep your oxytocin flowing. You need to really think about positions because actually so many, you know, gravity is our friend in labour. Gravity is our friend. Yeah, and I mean, we lie women flat on their backs.
It doesn't make sense, that, does it?
It doesn't make any sense. And do you know the history of this? Can I tell you the history of lying women on their backs?
Is it going to be really depressing?
No, it's fascinating.
Go on.
So Louis XIV was a bit of an old perv and he said that women in court should lie on their backs to have babies. Before Louis XIV, women commonly gave birth squatting on all fours, etc., supported
which is
by
much more natural,
female birth attendants, completely natural. He used to peek from behind a curtain because he wanted to see what was happening. And it got out into the streets that the women at court gave birth on their backs. And so then women at the masses would say, in the court they give birth on their backs, they would start to do the same. And then, of course, not long after, you have forceps are invented and then it's more convenient for men to pull babies out.
That's insane.
And if you think about it, your pelvis is 30% narrower if you're lay on your back on a bed. So you need to get upright, you need to get your legs apart, you need to squat, you need to hold on for dear life and roar like a lion.
Which you do see if you watch One Born Every Minute. I'm actually wondering whether there is going to be an entire generation of women giving birth in this country who will know a bit more about the reality.
So.
Ian, did you see that programme? Did you watch One Born Every Minute before?
I did. I didn't like it. I found it a bit traumatic. Beforehand, it wasn't something that I wanted to watch, and afterwards it was definitely something I didn't want to remind me of what I'd already seen.
The good thing about courses, whether they're NCT classes or courses that like the ones that you run, it does give you the opportunity to meet other people. And actually, the truth is, you'll have your old friends, but they may not necessarily be pregnant at the same time as
totally.
You. You're going to need someone to have a cup of tea with.
Completely. It's one of the most important. And I'm totally aware of that. They can listen to everything that we talk about in our sessions. But ultimately, the biggest benefit is going to be making a group of friends that you will then have those Me Too conversations with. And in fact, one of the group that finished last night, they've got a WhatsApp group going, so they're all on the same WhatsApp feed.
Right.
So we've even been having WhatsApp messages from one of the women who is currently in labour.
Right now
as we speak, which is really cool. You know, they're sharing that experience with each other all the time, and that camaraderie keeps you sane.
Yeah, and you missed out on this. You don't think that was... why didn't you go to a class?
We were in different circumstances. Again, we were in the northeast. We had the midwife at the doctor's surgery, who we saw every couple of weeks, and she was wonderful, and she allayed any fears that we had. We had the almost open day, I guess, at the local NHS hospital where there were lots of other parents and we were shown all the alternatives. And I think we were very laissez-faire with the whole thing anyway. We just wanted to go and do it. And
it's really fascinating because I always find it so interesting, the women and the couples who come to the course, because dads come to all of our sessions as well, which is this idea that you're laid back, which is great. Sometimes that's tipped over into denial, I think, for a lot of women. It isn't really happening, so we won't address it. And then you have the ones who will come and drop you an email or give you a call when they've just had their first scan and they want to get on it. And this is there's a bit of research done about like the people who are self-determiners, I think they're called, self-determinators, I think it was, in terms of birth. And they often have a better outcome because they take right. control of the situation and they will say, right, this is what I want. I'm going to try and get it. It may not go right. It may not go according to plan. You know, sometimes our bodies play tricks on us, and it might be that the position of the baby is wrong, that you can't have the birth that you intended to have. But actually, so often the women who have a good experience, have a positive birth, will say, I knew what was happening. I knew the options they were offering me. It was my decision. And I that's why they feel like they've had a great birth.
I don't want to be negative. In fact, I think it's really, really important that we say, and Ian has come closest to saying it because you admitted you burst into tears when your daughter was born, that men, sometimes women go on about what an easy life men have. But actually, I feel sorry for men because they will never know that, I mean, you can't even begin to describe it, that high. You have given birth.
I know. And I would, especially my middle one was born in the water in at sunshine, midday on Mother's Day. I mean, it was pretty cracking. And I've never had a high like it. I mean, I was off my face on gas and air, that helped. The midwife literally had to wrestle the canister out of her hand as she left later that day because I think that everyone...
You're still
should,
taking it?
Oh, if I could, I'd take it every day. I think every kitchen should have a tiny little canister on the wall for when your husband's stressing you out. You just go on the gas and air. Oh, yeah. I loved it, loved it, loved it. But, you know, it is incredible to be able to do that. And we've sort of lost sight of how blooming amazing it is that we do this as women, that we grow these babies and then we manage to get them out of our bodies. It's incredible.
So it's a difficult one, this, Ian, but if you could crystallise the most important bit of advice for a dad to be on the day of the birth, let's forget the next 120 years or however long this next generation are going to live for. What about the day they're born? What should a father expect? What can he do?
The most important thing is to remember this is not about you. You are there as support staff. Your ideas are probably not going to help. Your jokes are probably not going to be funny. This is not about you. Just be there.
I'm Beverly.
For the birth itself,
yep.
Prepare beforehand. Do some...
Well, actually, can you know too much?
No, you can't know too much. Okay. I don't think you can in terms of birth. You can't know too much. I think you can have too much of the wrong information. So you can have too much of scary movies where women are giving birth in the back of taxis. You can have too many horror stories from friends. You can have too many episodes of One Born Every Minute. You need to fill yourself up with positivity about birth before you get there. Do a course of either natal hypnotherapy, hypnobirthing. Get yourself into the position where you have confidence in your body. And also look at where you want to have your baby. Where would you feel safest? Is it at home? Is it in a birth centre? Is it in a hospital ward? Everybody is different and everybody's needs for that environment to be perfect are different. And aim high. You know, we often say to women, oh, the problem is with women who have bad births, they have very high expectations. Well, when else in life do we tell women to aim low? Just aim low. Don't aim low. Aim high. You're worth it. It's an amazing day and you deserve to have a great experience. Be that the elective section on the day that you want it, or be that the home water birth.
Well, I hope what people have picked up on from all this is that what really matters is we're all individuals, and it's a positive birth is what is right for you, or as good as it can be for you. And if the result is a healthy, happy baby, then your quid's in. That's fine. That's what we all really want. Thank you so much, Beverly Turner and Ian McIntosh. They're both on Twitter. It's at Ian McIntosh, at Beverly Turner. And if you'd like to find out more about Bev's Blooming Bunch antenatal classes, you can head to thebloomingbunch.co.uk. UK. Now, if you like what you've heard, please do share this podcast with your fellow parents-to-be on Facebook. You can find the rest of our episodes on iTunes. I'm Jane Garvey, and thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the My Baby and Me podcast in association with Nook. Visit us at nook.co.uk.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.